Back together again for you Thursday style, June the 4th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We jumped into the big Thursday show looking at different questions and answers from a new Quinnipiac University poll on the U.S. heading into the nation's 250th birthday. Quinnipiac University Associate Teaching Professor of Criminal Justice Jenna Curran discussed recent injuries to corrections officers in Connecticut prisons and also elaborated on how tough that job really is. Finally, former Republican State Senate leader John McKinney dropped by for his regular update discussing a new poll on the August Democratic primary and more. Yeah, you know I love numbers, right? I don't know, maybe it's my basic background as a sports guy or whatever, my play-by-play background, my color commentating background. You know I love numbers because numbers, numerals, totals, they're open for interpretation, but at least the basic number is there, and I can interpret it, and you can interpret it, and the guy over there can, and the woman over there can, and whatever, and we all can interpret it our own way, but we start from a focal point of the numbers. And there's a new Quinnipiac University poll out there from Doug Schwartz and our friends and Tim Shea at the Q poll there, Whitney Avenue in Hamden. And we'll get to some of this, but there's a key question here. And they asked a bunch of people here in the Quinnipiac University poll, and I'll give you the demographic breakdown in just a bit. But they asked a basic question here, and this number doesn't really surprise me, because if you would it held any sort of firearm to my fat head and said, what number would you pick here? I would have picked this number, but I want to get your thoughts on it. And there are a lot of questions in this poll, but we begin here. And how are you? It's Paul. It's Chris. It's all of yous out there on a Thursday, Connecticut Today. Big, big, big show coming up today. A lot of stuff to cover. So we're off and running at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. There's a new Quinnipiac poll out there. Here's what I think is the major question here. Do you think America's best days are ahead of us? Now, I'm the eternal optimist on this. I always take a step back, no matter what the country is doing, no matter what's going on in the world, no matter how many people love us, no matter how many people hate us, no matter what the status is, red versus blue versus independent, whatever. And I say the natural progression of who we are always wins in the end, right? I mean, look at all the stuff this country has slogged through since its founding almost 250 years ago. But as is pointed out in this poll, half of Americans, right on the button hook there, 50%, half of Americans think America's best days are coming up, are ahead of us. 41% think America's best days are behind us. And 9% are like, what's America? What is that, a new indie rock band? Now, along party lines, this doesn't surprise me either. What do you think the reasoning is for this? Republicans are more optimistic about the country. 62% of self-described Republicans think that America's best days are ahead of us. Just 29% of self-described red flag waving people, the red, the GOP, just 29% say the best days are behind us. Among independents right up there with Republicans. 50% of Republicans are optimistic about the country, saying the best days are ahead of us. 50% of independents say the best days are ahead of us. But among Democrats, what has happened to the once great Democratic Party? I ask this all the time. What has happened? Just 43% of Democrats think America's days are ahead of us, best days are ahead of us, while 49% of Democrats think America's best days are behind us. You Democrats, why so sad? Come on, Trump will be gone soon. He doesn't seem to know whether that fund, that $1.8 billion, whatever fund they called it, whether it's alive or not. That could be a good indicator of that, huh? Huh? So we start with this. We'll go over more numbers today, but let's start with a basic question. And I put this question up as our question of the day. Check it out, won't you? Facebook.com/voiceofct. There's a new Quinnipiac poll out there. It says 50% of U.S. adults overall think America's best days are coming up. They're ahead, as Mr. Sinatra used to say. The best is yet to come. And babe, won't it be fine? 50% of U.S. adults think the best is yet ahead. 50% of independents think that. Over 60% of Republicans think that. But just 43% of Democrats think that the best is yet to come. They're underwater in that. 49% say America's best days are behind us. Come on. But maybe you fall into that category. Love to hear what you think right now as we rev it up here on a Thursday. Our buddy John McKinney returns in the 5 o'clock hour, an analyst on prison safety and all that from Quinnipiac in the 4 o'clock hour. Yet another bizarre twist in the Aaron Stewart story. Hardly a day goes by, so we'll talk about that and more. Where's America going? Best days behind us or best days ahead of us? You tell me right here. WICC. 100 years. How about that? Pretty slick if you ask me, huh? And it already started. I knew if I stirred the pot, there'd be people arguing already. Just be nice. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct. New Quinnipiac poll out there says 50% of U.S. adults think America's best days are ahead. What do you think? What say you, as Mr. O'Reilly is known to say from time to time? I think America's best days are always ahead. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that whine and cry and scream about, oh, it's the end of America, and here comes fascism, and this, that, and the other. You'll never recognize this country in 4 years, 8 years, or 12 years. Come on, stop with all that. And I say that on both sides, too. You know, there's a lot of people who say, well, you know, the Dems are a bunch of commies. Oh, come on, stop. But why the differences in perception? Why the differences in perception by party and by voting affiliation? Why is that? In other words, why, according to this Quinnipiac poll here, why are Democrats underwater on this question or this notion of America's best still yet to come? Don't we always move ourselves forward in society, in science, in literature, in manufacturing and all this? Isn't there just a natural sort of progression here? Again, the Quinnipiac poll saying half of Americans, 50%, think America's best days are ahead of us. 41% think America's best days are behind us. That's what you would call +9, above water. Breaking it down along party lines, Republicans are above water big time. Republicans are, let's see, 62% say that America's best days are ahead. Just 29% think they're behind us. So what's that? Above water by 33%. Why are Republicans so much more confident in this question? Seriously, why do you think it is? Does it have anything to do with just generally how you look at things? You know, I always explain to people, people say, what's it like doing a show the way you do? And I say, well, I can tell you something. The conservatives and the Republicans I talk to, by and large, not everyone, they tend to be more optimistic. I've always found that conservatives, Republicans, what other, those who are center-right, tend to really glom onto what is good about this country. They complain, but they complain about things we're not doing enough on. Whereas I have always seen and believed that maybe out of the goodness of their hearts, a lot of progressives and Democrats will immediately point to what they perceive, and, you know, their perception is their reality, what they perceive as being what's not good about America or what we're not getting work done on. And again, not to say that some of their concerns are not valid, are not things that we should look at. That's not what I'm saying. But isn't it interesting? Don't you have these people in your family, in your circle of friends, in your neighborhood, at your church, at your synagogue, at your mosque, at your temple, in your book club, at your prayer group, right? Here he is, Joe flag-waving Republican. It's always the red, white, and blue. Or here comes negative Nancy. Oh, who's she? She's whining about Trump again. What a shock. Hi, Nancy. How are you? Why are people like that? Now, I know it basically emanates from, you know, pride and joy and anger and all that, and I get it and I understand it. But why, though, why is there this kind of this constant threat of this? And why do some people tend to look at what's good, what they perceive at what's good and great about the country? And some people will focus on, you know, what the song tells you to not focus on, right? You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Was the rest of that latch on to the affirmative? Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. So half of Americans, 50%, a big fat 5-0, think America's best days are coming up. 41% think they're behind us. How can our best days be behind us? How is that? How is that possible? When so many things that we rely on business-wise, technology-wise, medical-wise, they get better. And doesn't America have a wonderful automatic kind of mechanism to cleanse itself when it has to? And we made it through some tough times, Vietnam, Iran-Contra, the Persian Gulf, right? Watergate, and we all come out the better for it. And for everybody that says, you know, Trump is going to leave a country in tatters, come on. Come on. 6 months or a year later, a lot of the people who are screaming at each other on both sides are going to be laughing here. But you tell me, what's coming up? The best of America, about half the country thinks so, or is the best of America now fading, as they say, in the rear view window? I have been fortunate to have relatives in my close family who have worked in the state's penal system, both in the administrative level and actually in some of these prisons. And I would see them on holidays and we'd talk about it. And, you know, one thing we would always agree on, that it ain't easy. And I would tell my cousins doing it. One of them moved out of the state. He's doing it now in Tennessee after having put his time here. I said, man, how do you do this? And he was a reentry coordinator. He got his fulfillment out of this by helping inmates who were going to leave get back on the straight and narrow. How's your job situation? Whatever. So that was kind of the easy thing. Then again, I know guys and gals who are presently or formerly prison guards, and that can be downright hazardous. We don't mention enough about the chances that prison guards, corrections officers take when in the same breath we laud, as we should, EMTs, first responders, and fire and ambulance crews and all that. Well, there's been a few incidents of our fine corrections officers, men and women, getting hurt, getting attacked in some of these state prisons. The most recent one was the other night up there on Route 10 in Cheshire at that prison there. So to talk about what's going on here, how these investigations go on, we welcome Associate Teaching Professor of Criminal Justice at Quinnipiac University, Professor Jenna Curran. She brings a wide area of knowledge in corrections and alternatives to incarceration. Jenna, hi, it's Paul on WICC. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Good. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. What happened the other night, best as we've been able to find out? Let's talk about, I guess this happened in Cheshire up on Route 10 there. Is this typical of what happened? Lay out of this, well, lay out to my listeners here what we're talking about.
So I basically know as much as everybody knows with, you know, what has been reported in the news, but from working in the field, I never worked at Cheshire personally, but I have worked at higher maximum facilities in the state as well as low. And what happens is basically on every shift, officers are required to do two random shakedowns of a cell on each shift to just ensure there's no contraband, nothing that they're not supposed to have, any weapons of the like. And we also do targeted ones. And so maybe an intelligence officer, you know, got information that a certain inmate in a cell had brought contraband in, and we need to search that cell to then see if there is any contraband.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of the two scenarios where shakedowns would happen in a cell. And the inmate is always pulled out of the cell. They're kind of either, you know, placed in a in an area where they're being watched the entire time while the officers go through the cell. That's kind of usually why we do a shakedown. And they're always to keep safety and security in mind to make sure that the facilities are free of weapons and contraband.
Yeah. So we had a situation there where I guess things got out of hand, correct? There were punches thrown and now there's a big investigation and everything there. Yeah.
Yes. And so after a shakedown is done, if there, I'm unsure because I'm not working in the facility at the moment, but the contraband that was found, I don't know what that contraband was. It could be things like drugs, weapons, shanks, paraphernalia. Contraband is also things that are taken out of its original form in a prison. So something as small as when they wear sweatpants, they're not supposed to have pockets, but they can sew pockets in. So something small like that, I don't think that was the issue here. But just to give everybody an understanding of how the contraband, most of our minds go right to weapons, drugs, paraphernalia, that. But there's also stuff that's done in-house. I don't know what was found. The inmate was still in the unit. I don't know how. So it must have been something that wasn't super dangerous.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something very near and dear to him. Maybe it was something that he owed money for, right? So maybe it was outside contraband being brought in. He owed something to another inmate. The officer found it. They took it. Now he's pretty angry. And then eventually he's let out of his cell for a tear rack or a program or chow or what have you. And the officers are not in bubbles in all the facilities. And I believe Cheshire does not have bubbles because it's an old school prison like Osborne was where I worked.
Yeah.
And so when the inmates come out on the tier, they are free to walk up to the officers, ask them questions, ask for things that they might need. And I imagine that this inmate kind of ambushed those officers.
Wow. Wow. Jenny, you said we're talking to Jenna Kern, Associate Teaching Professor of Criminal Justice at Quinnipiac. You talked about your career. Why did you go into this? Because most people, Jenna, I mean, admittedly, you probably heard this, right? There are people asking you for how many years you did this. What are you doing? Why are you doing this among these people, quote unquote? What did you tell them?
So I got into corrections because I wanted to be a correctional counselor and use my degree and help people with reentry.
Yep.
And it's very hard to do that. They don't hire many counselors at once, but they hire a lot of correction officers at once.
Okay.
And I, too, had family in the unit. I had family in the system.
Okay.
And they said, hey, become a CO and then you can move around. And so I did, with always the mind of getting on the treatment side. And I was fortunate enough in my tenure to actually bounce back and forth from custody to treatment as well as training. But it is dangerous. Connecticut is not as dangerous as many states, I would say, down south or out west. But we are seeing an uptick in assaults on staff. You know, inmates are allowed out of their tiers longer now, which is great for inmates that are at a lower level, you know, to get them used to having that freedom before they're released. But if we're talking about inmates that are higher security, which, again, I don't know about this inmate, you know, that could be detrimental to the officers that are working that unit.
And I mentioned I have a cousin who's now out of state and he did the same thing that you did in the counseling and he really enjoyed it. I would imagine the counseling part of it, Jenna, can have really a self-fulfilling aspect to this for you folks to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're really, you know, the truth of the matter is over 92% of the people currently incarcerated are going to be back in our neighborhoods at some point. And so the more reentry, reintegration help that we give them, including post-incarceration, the more equipped they're going to be to be law-abiding citizens. And so that is really fulfilling when you know that you're helping somebody that is going to take that and actually stay out of the system. It's different when you're working in the unit, in the blocks, in the day-to-day, in the cells, in the dorms, you know, on the tiers, and you're seeing a lot of different things than the ones that are getting ready to essentially be out in society.
Mm-hmm. Do you, as a the outside people, but even the counselors, I guess, do you develop relationships with some of these inmates? Do you become their sounding board or their friend, especially if nobody comes and sees them? I've always wondered that.
Good question. No, I definitely would not say there's not a friendship or relationship built. There's these two terms that we use in the department, familiarity and undue familiarity. And it's important to know our inmates. I mean, they're watching us. It's important to know our offenders.
Sure.
But only on a basis where we're there to help them.
You
do listen to them. You do have to have that social work piece of it where you believe in the help and you believe in the work.
I mean, if you're on the block,
is always first.
If you're on the block some night, do they just want to talk? Does that ever happen or
always.
No?
Always. Yeah. And I would engage in many conversations with the offenders.
Yeah.
Very surface level, sports, weather, working out, you know, think never about my family, never about my personal things, never about my life.
Yeah.
But even that, even just talking to them about those simplistic things, you know, they start to build a rapport with you. And you do need that rapport because you don't want to be on the receiving end of an inmate that is going to try and attack you.
What would you say, Jenna, as we wrap up here, what would you say to somebody who said, "Yeah, you know what, I don't want to be a cop, don't want to be a fireman, no offense there, but man, I wonder what it's like working in a state correctional facility." And you said you've worked at all levels, both on the block and counseling. What would you tell a person who's wondering that, maybe listening to us now live or on a podcast?
I would tell them the same thing I tell my students. It is a very rewarding job if you know how to keep your personal life separate from work, how to help yourself avoid burnout, and to remember that the goal is to rehabilitate them, not to punish them. And if you get in and you keep that mindset, which is very difficult, it's a very negative environment, but if you keep that mindset and you take the different job opportunities that they have, the different positions that you could learn, you could really do a lot, not only for the department and yourself, but for the offenders that are coming back out. It is rewarding if you do it right, but it can absolutely be the exact opposite if you get in a rut or get stuck and get, you know, super bogged down by the negativity.
Jenna Kern, Associate Teaching Professor of Criminal Justice at Quinnipiac University. Jenna, thank you. Anytime, we'd love to have you on. We'll have you back, all right?
Absolutely, Paul. It's nice talking to you.
Thanks, Jenna. Appreciate that. Jenna Curran, C-U-R-R-E-N, Jenna Curran, Associate Teaching Professor at the Criminal Justice Department, Quinnipiac University, and you heard it right there. She was on the block. She was face-to-face with inmates for years and also did the counseling part of it as well. Good stuff there. Good people there. To comment on all that, we welcome back John McKinney from WTNH News 8's video, a TV presentation of the Capitol Report every Sunday morning at 10:30. John, it's Paul. Good to have you back. How are you, man?
Good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. What do you think of this? I think it's kind of expected, John, what we see in this poll, although no surprise as to where the delineation comes of the age and generational vote here, at least I think.
No, no real surprise. I mean, the initial ballot is Lamont 58, Elliott 20.
Mm-hmm.
Then here's the trick, Paul, because they do something called the informed ballot, which is where they supposedly give a neutral positive and minuses of each. Well, the negative on Governor Lamont is he's an out-of-touch billionaire. The negative on Josh Elliott is he's too liberal and wants to tax rich people. This is clearly a poll that was done in favor of Josh Elliott to make his numbers look better.
Well, when I was growing up, it was called a push poll, sort of, right?
Sort of. I mean, you try to do, you know, when I was running in the Republican primary, I did a generic ballot, and then I did actual statements about myself and, you know, my opponent, and the numbers do move. Obviously, Josh Elliott looks like he's going to get the $3.7 or whatever million dollars. His numbers are going to go up. The race will get closer. I still think it appears that Governor Lamont is a heavy favorite.
Yeah.
But it is a primary. So who do you get out to vote? If older people, Democrats who traditionally vote, come out to vote, Governor Lamont should be okay.
Yeah, and again, it's pointed out in the story that Dan Hard did, a very good and comprehensive story, that old people like to do primaries, John.
Yes, we do.
Yes, well, me too. But you know, so I guess if you're Josh Elliott's people, you say, geez, look at how much we cut off of this when we get young voters to say what they say. So if you're at campaign HQ there, right, John McKinney, and they say, well, John, you're a longtime guy invested in this. How do we boost young turnout to maybe pull off a major upset? What would you tell them? Is it possible even?
I would tell them to look at what Mamdani did on his campaign in New York. You need to be on all of these sites, Paul, and I don't even know half of the names of them, that all of these college-age kids and younger kids are on. I have a daughter who lives in New York City. She's on all of these TikToks and things I've never heard of. And she said, Dad, we're getting bombarded by Mamdani commercials, and it looks great. He looks good. He sounds good. He's promising everything. So that's what they're going to do with the $3 million. The one other caution I would give is that, you know, Governor Lamont has ability to spend $3 or more million. And I would expect that we're going to start to see maybe some of the negatives of Josh Elliott coming out as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think the governor's going to sit around and just give him a free pass and get attacked all the time.
So, John, is the governor then limited to that same amount? He can't sell. Can he self-fund the primary run too or not?
Oh, absolutely. He's decided to self-fund. He can spend whatever he feels like he wants to spend.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And it's funny you mentioned what your daughter said, because my son said the same thing. He lives in Queens, and he and his partner there that he lives with, they were super excited months ago about Mamdani, because he said, Dad, you can't go to any platform, and he's on them a lot because of what his business is, and he said he's all over the place. I said, well, yeah, John, gone are the days of sending out news releases, right?
That's correct. The news releases, the big flyers to your home, those are a waste of money.
Right? Oh, man. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. John, how do you size up what the Republicans are doing vis-a-vis Ryan Fazio? He's got a wide berth here to just take his time, introduce himself to people who, I guess, is that issue number one here, to introduce himself to people who kind of may have heard of him but maybe don't know?
Absolutely. You should be a campaign manager. He has the benefit now, instead of spending money going against another Republican and maybe being attacked, he has the benefit, without even talking a lot about issues or attacking the governor, to say, this is who I am. And he can set sort of a very personal narrative about, you know, himself, his upbringing, his fiance, the future they want to hold in Connecticut. He can present himself so that people will like him. I keep telling everybody, there's two things. People need to know who you are, and if they like you, they may vote for you even though they don't agree with you 100% of the time. So this is a great opportunity for him to introduce who he is before he gets into the, here's why Governor Lamont's been bad for Connecticut and here's why I'm better.
You know, there was a story, John, you probably undoubtedly saw the other day, where something like, at least at this point, and we know this can shift maybe in the next few weeks, something like 40 or 41% of all the legislative seats coming up, House and Senate, could be run with no opposition, could be just winner by default. I know it's tough. I know there are people that are entrenched in these seats for years, but that's not good for either party. What do you think about that?
No, it's not good. And one of the major arguments behind the campaign finance reform and having public funding was challengers were always having a hard time to raise money. This equaled the playing field on the money. And it did work for a while. I think now, Paul, people are seeing that, look, it is hard to be a legislator and keep your day job, number one. Number two, the politics is becoming so caustic and so nasty, it turns off a lot of people who may want to do it. And I think that is a real problem. You know, I when I was the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, I spent a lot of time going around the state, talking to people, encouraging them to run, offering them help and resources and ideas. But it's really hard to get people to make that commitment in this environment.
Yeah, and
that's sad, and it's really bad for our democracy.
Yeah, and finally, on the money thing, I thought Speaker Ritter in that story made a really good point. He said, listen, the base salary here, before you add on leadership and expenses and all that, is about $43,000, $44,000. Thankfully, we got that raised. But he said this is in a state where the median average income or the per capita is like $55,000. And again, John, you're expecting people who are not lawyers, real estate agents, doctors, who can have the fluidity to rearrange their schedules at a moment's notice. You're trying to find people who are not tied to that, that can do that. And I got news for you. For $55,000, it ain't easy. I didn't think it would be.
Well, yeah, it's not the money, though. And I would also tell you that in addition to the salary, you have tremendous health care benefits,
yeah,
which if you're married with three kids, mm-hmm, it's probably $35,000 a
wow
year. I'm not making that up. That was what I had to pay when I left state service, and I had to pay for the health care.
Yeah.
and so there are benefits to it. But I really think, and obviously some of these districts, you know, there are some districts where a Republican hasn't won in forever. There are some districts where Democrats haven't won forever. But I think it's really the nature of our politics. People don't want to serve and be constantly attacked online day after day after day. It's just become very ugly. And it's hard,
yeah,
if you're in office, to sort of turn off that social media button.
Yeah. John McKinney, catch him and the entire panel coming up this Sunday morning, 10:30, the Capitol Report on WTNH News 8. John, thanks, man. Appreciate the time. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
All right. There you go. All right.